The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon. Our guest today is Mr. Ryan Wood. Ryan first became exposed to UFOs when his father, Dr. Robert M. Wood, was engaged in deciphering the physics of UFOs while managing a research project on anti-gravity for McDonnell Douglas. In 1978, he graduated from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, that's a mouthful, with degrees in mathematics and computer science. Ryan is regarded as a leading authority on the top secret classified Majestic 12 intelligence documents and the 1941 Cape Girardeau, Missouri UFO crash. A frequent lecturer on the UFO subject, Ryan has taught college courses and made numerous presentations about UFOs to civic organizations and at ufology conferences around the world. He manages the content of MajesticDocuments.com, and along with his father, was the executive producer of a television documentary that aired on the Sci-Fi Channel detailing the authenticity of the Magic 12 documents called The Secret, which I have watched. In fact, I own a copy of that. He has been interviewed on numerous television shows such as the History Channel, ABC News, and numerous local Bay Area, Denver, and Las Vegas TV channels. Ryan is the author of Magic Eyes Only, Earth's Encounters with Extraterrestrial Technology. And I had him on the show way back in 2007, and I'm happy to have him back with us. Welcome, Ryan.
Well, thanks, David. It's great to be back. The kids have grown up and they have cars now, so my time is a little freer. But I'm starting back into promoting UFO crashes. I mean, given David Grush's congressional testimony and the sudden realization of Congress and mainstream media that, oh, my goodness, this is real. And so that's been a fun new dimension in the last couple of months.
Yeah, of late, I always ask my guests, what do you think of David Grush's testimony? And I take it you agree with him?
Well, yeah, to the extent that he was briefed on the whole subject. I think that, you know, his career as a major in the Air Force and as an intelligence officer, you know, spans the last 20 years. But I think based on his congressional testimony, saying the first crash happened in 1930s sometime, he didn't specifically say the 1933 Italian crash, or let alone the Cape Girardeau 1941 crash, or the earlier research into the 1897 Aurora, Texas crash. And so I don't know that it has the full history and background, but certainly has a very clear modern understanding of the corporations, the people that are currently running the reverse engineering efforts. I'm glad that he provided the testimony and educated Congress in a public way, but also more importantly, potentially, is the private inspector general conversations and the private conversations in the top secret SCIF at the right level. It's funny that I suspect that many of the congressmen, although they may have top secret SCI clearance, they may not have a need to know, and they may not be allowed to hear some of the stuff that's going on. So I'm encouraged that this lot more engagement and need for transparency and greater visibility and understanding of this great technological gift that humanity has, but is currently cloistered and secret and unavailable for the benefit of mankind.
Well, you say if the congressmen have a need to know. Now, when he gave his testimony for in front of Congress, he said that he'd be willing to give certain information in a SCIF or a secret
compartmentalized information facility. Yeah,
right. So what they weren't going to give him that, my understanding, and then they did give him that. So weren't those congressional representatives in on that SCIF?
I think so, probably many of them. But, you know, it starts off with the security officer telling you, you know, this is national security. You're not to divulge anything. You can't go public and talk about what you heard here, you know, on and on, or you're going to end up in jail.
Yeah, well, they told that to David Grush, and yet there he was.
Well, he was a whistleblower. He had whistleblower protection, and he went through the various protocols to become whistleblower and urged Moore to do that. And I think that's, I admire his courage. Congress could pass a law basically negating all agreements with any government or national security agency or any agency. Maybe. I don't know enough about the law to understand that. But they really want to get to the bottom of it. They start calling in the corporations and the witnesses.
Yes, indeed. So have you been able to personally discuss crash retrieval cases with David Grush or any other whistleblowers for that matter?
Not with David Grush.
No?
Not yet, hopefully. And not with any congressional staff yet, but I've started to send copies to the various congressmen and particularly Tim Burchett and others that were there to try to get a, let them know about the history and that, you know, there's not just some 30 crashes. In Magic Eyes Only, Earth's Encounters with Extraterrestrial Technology, there are 104 documented cases. The original book that was put out in 2005, which we talked about in 2007, I think, had 74 crashes from around the world. And this goes up to 2008, the last crash. And it has updates from many of the investigators and more details. And, you know, it was a 300-page book, and now it's a 500-page book. So it's more complete and robust. But I still had to leave another 10 crashes on my desk because I just wanted to get it done and save them for the next edition.
So I was going to say, in fact, I have that as my last question. Is there another book in the offing for you?
Well, the other book that I did just in December was the AI or artificial intelligence.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Technologist. And that, it's on Amazon, both of them are on Amazon, was born out of my business work with artificial intelligence and training artificial intelligence on fusion science, which I'm the CEO of a fusion company. And then I've trained it on UFO knowledge. And then I started to ask it questions. And the first question I asked is, what's the ET agenda? And I got back 14 little paragraphs. And I said, wow, I thought of 10, but I missed the other four. And then from there, it just kept getting more interesting. And I kept asking more questions. And so 16 hours later, I had asked 30 questions of increasingly complicated sophistication about what I was anxious about with the extraterrestrial ET environment and our place in it. Why are they here? Why do they abduct humans? Why is it a national security thing? How can the conflicts between national security and the government be resolved? Or, well, there's so much to be understood. Why haven't they made contact?
Well, I would say they have made contact, don't you
Well, yeah, that's true.
think?
And I meant in an open sense. Why haven't they landed on the White House lawn, say? Why are they hiding the truth about extraterrestrial visitation? But then, those are sort of the typical predictable things. But some of the ones that might be more complicated, for example, that gave me some interesting answers, and I'll just read you this one question. There have been many reports that ET communications with humans occur without words and conversation takes place in the minds of the individuals. If mental and telepathic and psychic communications were possible to be trained technologically for most humans, how would this affect the trajectory or progress of humanity or cultures? Is this a positive or negative, recognizing that it might take 10 or more years for this skill to develop and mature? That's an example of something that I was personally curious is can you take a medicine to be more psychic? Can you meditate more? Can you do that more? I mean, clearly the ETs have a mental and telepathic skill far beyond humans. And so that's something lacking. And there's other things around, the economics of the world, and crop circles and, which people throughout history have been influenced by extraterrestrials, or, who are the top 10 contactees or abductees or experiencers, and what are their messages to humanity? So it's a very different sort of book. It's not so much about sightings or crashes or this or that, the other thing. It's more of a blueprint and a strategic plan to integrate the mankind today and the ET presence into the future. So,
So these are the questions you pose to AI or computers, right?
yeah, but it was more than just ChatGPT-4. I mean, I had trained it on a body of over 100 books. So it had some context and basis to respond to the questions that I posed.
So, bottom line, what answer did you get to what is ET's agenda?
Well, there's no clear-cut answer, but that's a great question. I mean, to sort of go through some of the key points, I mean, one is naturally scientific study. They're here to study emerging civilization. The other thought is they're in hunt for resources, be it water or gold or human DNA or something else that they can't get in the galaxy easily, or it's more cost effective to come here. And then there's the notion of benevolent guidance. Okay, we got this young emerging civilization that's about to blow itself a kingdom come. let's do what we can to make sure they don't do that. And eventually, in time, join the Galactic Federation of Happy, Peaceful, growing nations. And then there's the contrast to that, the benevolent intentions that different races have different agendas. And, why don't they just blow the whole planet up and then we can come in and colonize it, or maybe just colonize it anyway. Another thought is that they're just plain indifferent. Who gives a shit? We see this planet millions of times in multiple galaxies, and we know how this ends. We know how it started. We've been monitoring all along. It's just another data point on this giant chart.
So
Another agenda item is survival. It's like, oh, our planet is blown up. Our sun is dying. We need a new place to hang out. Let's go to planet Earth. Another.
I would think that Earth is just one of many choices for them, don't you think?
I know it is, but at the same time, I'm kind of thinking it's like a Hawaii or a Guam. It's sort of strategically placed in the galaxy as a hopping point or something. It's sort of special, and well, we can't make it all the way to some other galaxy. Let's stop here because it's two-thirds of the way out of the spiral ring, and they got good water, and I can refuel and keep going. So, and then there's genetic manipulation. That's always a big one. Hey, well, the most valuable thing on planet Earth is human DNA. 98% of our DNA is like, we have no idea what it's supposed to do. It's considered junk. And maybe it's not
98%.
junk.
98%?
Yeah, it's some huge astronomical number. Yeah. And so that may be actually extremely valuable for some reason. I don't know. They might be here to salvation of the human species and provide be guardians for humanity. Or let's preserve the genetic diversity of planet Earth because it's taken millions of years to create such genetic diversity, and the people on planet Earth are killing it rapidly.
Really?
Yeah, so that gives you a flavor for just the surface of the agenda possibilities, and each one of those comments is a paragraph or two that are more succinct, articulate.
Right. Sounds to me like be more confused at the end of it than I was with going in.
Well, that's a good observation, David. It's clear that it's a complex conundrum, and multiple races have multiple agendas. I don't think it's all homogeneous, although,
But you do believe we're being protected at least by at least one of the races, correct?
I'm not sure I have any data one way or the other, but it certainly seems reasonable. I mean, if I was to bet, I would say you're right.
I need to take one moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with researcher and author, Mr. Ryan Wood. Ryan, you authored, of course, the book Magic. Okay.
Eyes only, yeah.
Eyes Only, that's right.
Magic Eyes Only, Earth's Encounters with Extraterrestrial Technology. It's a, compendium, a landmark synthesis of 104 UFO crash retrieval cases from 1897 to 2008, many with official documents, eyewitnesses, and evidence, sometimes physical evidence. Most of it is reports and witnesses and documents.
Yeah.
And they're all ranked and rated too. I mean, some are more credible than others. Roswell, for example, or Kecksburg or Shag Harbor or Braxton County, West Virginia. And then there's less credible ones with less research, less evidence, but still sort of what I call neutral. I mean, they're just dying for people to do more research and
right.
move the authenticity needle higher or lower.
So MAGIC is MAJIC. What does the acronym MAGIC stand for?
That's a great question. Many people ask that. It's a military assessment of the Joint Intelligence Committee. That's a 1947 document that basically spells out the military assessment for the Joint Intelligence Committee.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where that code word came from. It may be different now. I'm sure that they changed things. I mean, it's probably no longer Majestic 12 or MJ-12. It's maybe something else, but maybe they kept it. I don't know.
Same basic group, though, right?
Yeah, it's the same group, the same group that basically is responsible for reverse engineering and crash retrievals and extraterrestrial bodies. And what do you do with them? How do you communicate with them? What's the procedure, policies?
It was my understanding that it's so compartmentalized. This area knows this about ufology, and this area knows that. But you got dozens, maybe hundreds of different compartments, and it all goes back to Majestic 12 or MAGIC. Is that correct?
Yeah, no doubt. You never want the material scientists to know, the full picture. You send them, here's a little piece of weird metal. What is it? How do you make it? What's it good for? And you send it to the Aerospace Corporation and have them do research on it, write reports, and give you the information back. So you'd have people right in the Special Operations Manual, Extraterrestrial Entities, Technology, Recovery, and Disposal, that was leaked in 1994. There's all sorts of categories of, where do you send the weapons? Where do you send the parts? Where do you send the propulsion units? Most of it's to Area 51 S4, but some of it's to Wright-Patterson, Blue Lab, and a few other locations. So, yeah, I mean, there's all these different compartments,
right,
working on different aspects of the technology.
Now, Majestic 12, the 12 gentlemen who were in that group, was established in 1947, same year as the Roswell event. Was that a coincidence?
No. It's the direct cause of, I mean, and the formation of the Atomic Energy Act and the formation of the CIA. I mean, the earlier events that happened in Los Angeles in 1942, and the Cape Girardeau, Missouri crash in 1941, these were all brought to the attention of Vannevar Bush and the OSRD, Office of Science and Research Development.
Mm-hmm.
And that went right up to Roosevelt, and Roosevelt said, hey, stop. Go win the war first, and then come back to me about, what to deal with these celestial gifts, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so they did that, and then Roswell happened, and then they had more evidence, more crashes, and more bodies, and then it just started to keep going, and lots of research on the nature of what happened in Roswell. Roswell is naturally one of the most investigated crashes and retrievals.
Yeah. They didn't stop at weather balloon, huh?
Yeah. That's, that brings up an interesting point, David, is that the whole disinformation strategy is so pathetic. I mean, the weather balloon for Roswell was quickly dismissed as being, wrong in a variety of movies and analysis. But it's important to remember that if any of these documents were disinformation, that they were extremely good. They were beyond amateur level. Is it beyond the CIA, the KGB to create some of these things? I think not. However, normally disinformation is you have a target and you want to tell them a lie and a lie and a lie and lie and then tell them the truth, or the other way around, tell them the truth, and then slip in a lie. And so it simply would attract tremendous espionage on, I think the French and the Israelis and the Chinese and the Russians, well, boy, we need to go get our own crashes, and we need to have some spies start to penetrate the Air Force and the Pentagon and these corporations. And so it just seems like any responsible psychological warfare officer would say, no, don't do this. This is stupid. Let's not try to do anything like this.
Reminds me of that line from the movie The Exorcist. The demon mixes truths with lies to confuse you, right?
Right. Yeah, there you go. And so that's why disinformation doesn't really play a role here. I think also, the Russians and the Chinese and other places have their own crashes. The question is, what do they do with it? You have to, if you have all this advanced technology you don't understand, you need more PhD scientists to investigate and figure out what's going on. And this is the embodiment of the great hubris of this cabal and this group of people to think that they, in their, smart, bright way of a thousand bright people, have anywhere near the capacity of the global scientific community to understand and break through and reverse engineer the technology. So, I mean, that's been the disservice to humanity. I mean, we could have had anti-gravity and free energy and free food and desalinization and uplift all of humanity 30, 40 years ago if they had ever, been more open. Maybe.
Yeah, but corporate America would never stand for that, right?
Well, that's certainly true. There'd be a lot of pain, a lot of Saudi oil fields that are suddenly worthless, or Exxon and Chevron and the energy complex. But it's going that way anyway with solar and wind, although not really. There's still a tremendous need for hydrocarbons to keep everything going. You really need a breakthrough in anti-gravity or fusion, which is what, my day job is about.
So we had Paul Blake Smith on the show a little over a year ago, and Smith authored the book Mo 41, The Bombshell Before Roswell,
Right.
which relates to the April 1941 UFO event outside his hometown of Cape Girardeau, Missouri.
Right.
And
Yeah.
it's my understanding that you were the original researcher on that case. Is that right?
That's true. I was the original researcher, found Charlotte Mann. Well, Stan Friedman, I think, found Charlotte Mann, who was the granddaughter of Reverend Huffman, who was the reverend that was taken to the crash site and offered blessings over that. But I did a lot of research, been to Cape Girardeau many times, did research in the National Archives around aerial photography and around the fire department records, and interviewing Charlotte Mann in much detail and her discussions of the deathbed confession of Reverend Huffman's wife, Flo Huffman. And then Paul was interested, and I gave him all my data, and Paul kept going. So I'm thankful for Paul to keep the effort alive, because I think it's an important event, a strategic event. I mean, Cape Girardeau is the home of Rush Limbaugh. I don't know if you knew that. And Rush Limbaugh Jr., before he passed away, acknowledged on his radio station in a sort of a casual way. Some listener called in and said, have you heard about the Cape Girardeau 1941 UFO crash? And he hemmed and hawed and said, yeah, there's a lot more to that story than people think. and left it at that. But that's just one witness example. I mean, Charlotte Mann and Reverend Huffman are the primary witnesses, along with documents.
Who was it that just said they're on our doorstep? Have you heard that?
No, I don't remember that.
I forget now. I'll have to do my research and state it on another show. But someone in the know let it slip. They're on our doorstep, meaning ET.
Well, what is the doorstep? I mean, they're here. I mean, they're in the ocean. They're in the mountains. They're abducting people. There's clearly a purpose and a mission to what some witnesses are doing.
Like MUFON, when MUFON first got started, they were interested in the nuts and bolts craft, okay? And they didn't even talk about ETs or where they're from or what are they doing. They didn't talk about abductions.
Yeah.
Didn't go there.
I mean, I've been to maybe 15 MUFON symposium, international symposium, and they did a fairly robust effort. They 160 regression hypnosis sessions that were all cataloged and analyzed. And I believe, I don't remember the year that it was done, but I want to say it was in the early 2000s, where they talked about that. But I'd say their primary focus is not experiencers. There seems to be more along the scientific end. And no doubt, the scientific end is extremely important. I mean,
but I've always said, wait a minute, they're not just going to send somebody's got to be manning these craft. You're interested in nuts and bolts, that's fine, but somebody's got to be operating these craft, if not personally, remotely. Who and why? That's what
I mean, there are a variety of different races that come to mind. And why? I mean, that goes back to the agenda of what they're doing and what they're after. And different races have different missions. But it really doesn't matter what, in my mind. I mean, what's key is how do we use the technology to elevate humanity and get rid of our fundamental problems that allow us to be so belligerent, so to speak. I mean, why do we have wars everywhere? Why is there such inequality between the haves and the have-nots? Why are people starving? I mean, what is it, 3 billion people are lacking clean water and food? If you're if you're a alien civilization that comes upon this planet and say, "My God, what a basket case!" Right? Can't they just, take care of all these souls? Can't you educate them? Can't you feed them? Can't you shelter them? Can't you make a happier, fairer, more democratic world?
They can, but
But yes.
when that comes into being, there's going to be wars over who gets the technology, because the country or the person who has that technology runs the world, wouldn't you say?
Well, yes, provided it's sophisticated and complex. For example, the work that I'm doing in fusion is very democratizing. I mean, it's simply lithium and ammonia and noble gases in a small power appliance that runs with a switching power supply and fits in a suitcase. And any, in 6 months, any country in the world or any educated PhD chemist and electrical engineer can start making their own. And now all of a sudden, there's no monopoly whatsoever. Everybody can make free electricity. And that is, changes the logistics of the war machine, but it really is not the problem of gravity control. Because if you have gravity control, then you could, fly things around and be really obnoxious. But no.
Be really obnoxious.
That's right. But if you give everybody free electricity in a suitcase, now the utilities are going to be hurt, and the oil and gas industry is going to be hurt eventually, and it'll take time, but that seems to be an example of a technology that's elevating, but less disruptive to the situation.
But you can go back. We can go back to horseless carriages. They're going to put the carriage of horses and carriages out of business. What are we going to do? We can't have horseless carriages.
Yeah,
Well,
I mean, right. I mean, it happens everywhere from Tesla's electricity and the motor to horse and buggy, as you highlight, to the wheel. It's all sorts of examples.
So I need to take one more break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with the author and researcher, Mr. Ryan Wood. So back to Girardeau, Cape Girardeau, there were entities involved. Is that right?
Yeah, three entities, as I'm aware of, that Reverend Huffman offered blessings on. My understanding is they were all dead at the time, and the military showed up. Reverend Huffman was there before the military showed up, and then they showed up and carted everybody. They erected back to Sikeston Air Force Base, which is Sikeston base, I think. I don't think there was a, it was actually a training location for a lot of aviators in Second World War. So that's, who knows where they went from there. And my focus has been, how do you determine precisely where and when this occurred? I mean, even Paul's Blake Smith's claim that it's in April of 41. All we really know, it was quote sweater weather, according to Charlotte Mann, and that could have been in the fall or the spring.
Right.
Not in the summer or the winter of 1941. So, precisely when it happened is a key, still open question. And precisely where? I mean, I had done comparisons of the, 1939 aerial photography in the National Archives and the 1943 aerial photography within the 15-minute ride in the police car that Reverend Huffman took from his house on Main Street in Cape Girardeau. So there's only so many places you can go for so long, based on that map and those roads at the time, to so many different fields, and try to pinpoint specifically where to look for artifacts. And one of my UFO crash retrieval symposia, well, from 2003, I think 2009, I had seven UFO crash retrieval conferences in Las Vegas. And with, a weekend and 10, 15 speakers. But one of the speakers I brought in one time was an expert, an aviation historian, who talked about crashes, airplane crashes, and recovery of airplane crashes. And some of them were top secret airplanes and their recoveries. And about this time, a stealth fighter crashed in Bakersfield, California, sort of before stealth fighters were announced. And he went to the crash site, found it, and rummaged all over the hillside and picked up all sorts of parts. Brought them back to the stage and said, here's a piece of wreckage from a stealth fighter. The military had already been out there and quote, cleaned it all up. But no, they hadn't. And
Yeah,
this
I'm sure
is
that
typical.
I'm sure that there are bits and pieces from Roswell that's still floating around somewhere.
Yeah, well, Linda Howe has the famous bismuth magnesium part, the 15 angstrom layers alternating between bismuth and magnesium. And you say, well, you can't make that on Earth. It's really weird. It's got weird isotopic ratios. What's it good for? Bismuth is very diamagnetic. And the scientists are sort of stroking their chin. Well, I'm not quite sure how this works, but
So I would say duplicate it.
yeah, and you can't.
You can't.
Maybe you can start doing some experiments where you do vapor deposition of layers of bismuth and magnesium alternating back and forth, at maybe little thicknesses, and try to understand its electrical properties or its reaction to electromagnetic radiation. But hey, you can suddenly spend $1 million doing R&D like that, and who's going to pay you? Well, who's going to pay for it?
Maybe they could ask MUFON. What do you think?
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, in my opinion, all of ufology is basically broke. I mean, yeah, people make money on videos and podcasts and books and MUFON and conferences and stuff, but I suspect it's a couple $1 million a year, and what you need to do is investigate. I mean, my book, Magic Eyes Only, the key takeaway is that there's loads of opportunity to go investigate. And it takes serious money to investigate. You have a lead of witnesses in time, but you need to go there. You need to do the historical research. You need to have private investigators. You got to do the archives. You got to look up people's addresses and property records. And I mean, you got to basically do that whole FBI detective thing for sometimes a year. And find witnesses and so forth. So it's lacking investigation.
And do that all gratis, right?
Right. Or, yeah, I mean, and that's I mean, God bless MUFON and the QFOS before and AfroBulletin before that and the organization that will come after it and all the people that keep spending their own money to
Well,
uncover the truth.
I am sure there's a lot of money being spent by black projects in America,
Well,
like
certainly, yeah.
millions of our dollars, you know?
Right, and you know, it's our money that they're spending.
Yeah, that's my point.
Yeah, and it reminds me of a key axiom that people tend to forget is that there's three types of knowledge in the universe or in our world. There's the white world, which you know implies the scientific community, the peer-reviewed papers, the universities, the archives, what's, you know, on Google Scholar and all those things. And naturally, the black world, where there's classified information, nuclear secrets, classified patents, and the nature of, you know, how you build a nuclear-powered submarine or something like that. And then there's the proprietary world, the trade secrets. It's the secret sauce of Lockheed or McDonnell Douglas or EG&G or other organizations that's trade secrets, tradecraft. It's where anti-gravity is. It's possibly where fusion is. It is in those super secret hidden people and locations that may be outside of government control. Or access, or rarefied access. I think it was one of the testifiers in Congress that said, "Well, if you know where to look, you can find out what's going on," and that's the challenge.
Know who to talk to. Which crash that you're privy to do you feel is the most compelling?
Well, the word compelling is tricky. Compelling to who, you know, I mean, Roswell is the one that, you know, pops up the most. And there are others, Kecksburg and Sag Harbor and Braxton County, West Virginia, and those are sort of at the top of the list. But, you know, Roswell is the one that's been most talked about, most investigated. But it's what impresses people the most. You know, I'd be most impressed by hieroglyphics and power plants. Others might be more fascinated with the ET bodies and the alien biology.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah.
That would be my choice.
Yeah. But then other people might be more mesmerized by, you know, they clearly have the ability to disable radar systems and electronic communications and manipulate space-time or somehow quasi weapons or phasers on stun or you know and the weapons people will be up for that but you know well maybe these are just biological cyborgs with AI capability. And they're disposable. I mean, people often ask, well, you know, why was it? I can't remember the senator, the congressman's name. He was from Missouri, I think. He was new. And said, you know, why in the world would these advanced civilizations crash on our planet? Just incredulous if that could happen. And my answer to that is in part what David Grush said in his testimony that. You know, there's a certain number of sorties and a certain number of mission failures and so forth. But I would say, well, we've had programs to actively shoot them down, like in the LA case cases, or you know, a big negative lightning bolt of a million or 2 volts and 1 million amps is nothing to be sneezed at.
I know.
So, I mean, this happens in Roswell. Have you ever been in Roswell in the summertime in a lightning storm? That is an impressive experience.
Okay. So, do you feel that Colonel Philip Corso's book, The Day After Roswell, was accurate in detail?
Yes, in a broad sense, I do. However, Corso's original book was edited by Barnes, I believe, and my father saw the edits, and I think Barnes sort of butchered some of the book, in my opinion, from the original testimony. But yes, I believe that Corso was telling the truth, and that he had this encounter where the aliens showed up and, told him we need to turn off the radar, and he said, "Well, what's in it for me?" And the alien said, "A better world if you can handle it." And so,
Now,
yeah,
where was this conversation going on?
I think it was in a cave, I think, in New Mexico or something. It's written up in his book, and so it was his firsthand experience and interface with an alien as well.
Okay, you lost me now. Who's
Corso, Colonel Corso.
Oh, Corso, okay.
Colonel Corso. Yeah.
Corso also saw dead bodies.
I think so, but I was referring to his personal interaction with the live alien.
Okay. That must have been after he saw the dead body, because he was a
I
bit
have to
amazed.
reread it. I suppose if I should tell the story, I should make sure it's all right.
No, but what I'm getting at is Corso said that he was given this stuff, and take this to Boeing, and take this to another researcher, and see what they just call it foreign technologies, and see what they can make of it.
Right.
A lot of things that we have now came out of that.
Yeah. Well, that's the claim, is that there's been reverse engineering, and that night vision goggles came out of it, or I mean, some of the early Majestic documents that are talk about on the,
Velcro.
well, not Velcro, it was fiber optics, and the secret to what they found in the craft was this optical cable, this glass-like clay cable, excuse me, with a cladding-type wrap, and that is the key to fiber optics, is that you have this secondary different diffraction response in the glass fiber. To create the signal and maintain the signal. So it's and the history of fiber optics is sketchy, as well as, I mean, the history of the transistor, or the integrated circuit more likely, helping things along. I think the whole what I would call purloined progress, or stolen progress, or reverse engineered progress, there's something to that, and somebody needs to do some investigations about, as you mentioned, Velcro or fiber optics or night vision goggles, and there's some other technologies that have claimed to have come from ET craft.
But would they give us straight answers?
Well, no.
So all we can do is take the ufologist's word.
Right. Well, we can start doing investigations about the origins of these technologies. It reminds me of superconductivity, for example. If you look up Wikipedia, it was understood in the 80s or something like that, or the 70s, where I've been doing research with a historian and researcher, Todd Ryder, on German science and German Nazi scientists, and clearly read a description of superconductivity in, 1932 or 3 or something like that, in Germany, which isn't it. All the greatest scientists in the world have come out of Hungary and Germany, and now the world is more stable and more uniform for fundamental breakthroughs. But it's
And the 19, or I'm sorry, the 1897 Aurora, Texas UFO crash, there was also body of it, or was there
yeah,
body?
there was a little monument in Aurora, Texas, to small alien. There was a little gravestone that was there, but it was surreptitiously dug up in the 70s, I think, and it was gone. And there's a lot of reporting about that, and it crashed into a windmill. And there's a lot of radioactivity on the ground and newspaper reporting and so forth. And that's all written up in my book, Magic Eyes Only. And it's available on Amazon. So
So
yeah,
magic.
I mean, there's that one. And I even start the book off at Mount Ararat at 3000 BC, and the CIA's undue interest in that mountain and its anomalies.
So there's biblical connections to it.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's it goes back to the whole ark. Is the ark an ET vehicle or a real
Yeah.
bomb or not?
Funny, I've written a science fiction book called A New Heaven, A New Earth, and that was pretty much the Ark.
Ah.
The aliens picking up samples and of human beings or what have you.
Yeah.
So, but
Yeah.
I've just blown the whole premise of the book, so I'll shut
Yeah.
up.
Yeah. So
Oh, go ahead.
the other thing that's been exciting me is the AI ufologist. I met a guy who's translating it to Mandarin Chinese,
Hello?
and so it's going to be available in Chinese and that was the one that I, as somebody who studied ufology for a long time, that was one of the most fun projects that got me excited about.
So
Yeah.
the AI ufologist, that's the book, your new book, right?
Yeah, that's the one that caught me, the answering the big questions of ufology. So that's the and to some extent, you ask the question that, what can be or is the role of artificial intelligence in accelerating the disclosure of the extraterrestrial presence to humanity? What are the best ways of using AI to achieve this end? And so that's, one example. Or what is the nature of crop circles and their technological messages? And I mean, that's a little, we think of crop circles related to ET,
Yeah.
.
I hate to say it, but we've run out of time, but I certainly appreciate you coming on the show with us, right?
Thanks for the opportunity, David. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage. Scroll down to We Are Not Alone and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archive shows. Or click on the Talk Shows button, then the We Are Not Alone button for the latest show archives. And please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.